The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Yeah, busy first hour. Shane Beamer and Blake Topmeyer. Beamer talking about Carolina. Topmeyer talking about the hire today in Knoxville. We'll continue to talk about the Heupel hire. There is some other news out there. The former coach who was fired 2 days ago may be heading to the NFL, according to Bruce Feldman. Pruitt working on a deal to join the Jets. Haven't they suffered enough? Speaking of the Jets, a former New York Jets starting quarterback from Alabama. No, not Joe Namath or Richard Todd, but Greg McElroy. Greg, great to have you on. And Jeremy Pruitt's a really good defensive coach, so I would think he'd fit in fine in the NFL, wouldn't he?
I think that's a good spot for him, Paul, at least at this point. I think he's a little toxic for this level, so it's understandable that he might try to find something up there. And it just ironic to me thinking, Jeremy Pruitt, oh man, you know, I'm just walking around New Jersey. That's going to be interesting. I think the culture shift there for Jeremy, who's really lived in the South his whole life.
Yeah, I can just imagine Jeremy walking in a bagel shop in Haysbrook Heights or something. Anyway, let's talk about the story of the day, and that was in Knoxville. And you know Josh Heupel, certainly a great reputation as an offensive mind. Being a successful Tennessee coach requires a lot more than that. How would you assess the hire?
I'm excited about it. I did have my fair share of reservations, partly because Josh Heupel inherited what was a great situation at UCF, and there are unknowns about whether or not he can build a program. I think that's a reasonable pushback and an assessment of what it was that he was able to accomplish. Now, we can't overlook the success that he had in Orlando, and he was able to formulate a lot of problems for people with the type of offense and the style that he ran, Paul, but he walked into to a Ferrari that was already cranked into fifth gear because of what they accomplished, having beaten Auburn, having done and accomplished so much under Scott Frost. He walked into a pretty solid situation. So now he steps into quite literally the opposite. This is going to be very difficult. And I just want the people of Tennessee to understand, look, I don't want you to change your long-term expectations for the program. Absolutely not. You should be contending for championships. You hope to be contending for championships. First foremost, though, you got to establish the foundation, and you have to do so the right way. So don't change your long-term hopes, dreams, goals, and aspirations for this program, but live in the moment. If I call into a radio station and have to do an interview with all the wonderful people on Rocky Top next September, don't be telling me they're going to go 9-3, 10-2. That's not going to happen, not in the near term. We can be excited about the long-term growth and potential, but at this point, we need a little bit of a reality check and knowing this can be a slow process to get Tennessee back to where they want to be.
Greg, you're absolutely right. Tennessee fans will be understanding until they get the first win, and then it'll all be over. But that's those are college fans. In your estimation, we don't know what the final roster is going to look like. Heupel may turn a few players around. He may not. But this was already a sinking ship. What does the roster look like now?
It's obviously a problem. But one thing that Josh Heupel does have a lot of credibility with is the quarterback position. So regardless of whether it's Hendon Hooker, whether it's someone that they already have on the roster, or if they go to the transfer portal themselves, Tate Martell, ironically enough, is available in the transfer portal now. I think he's on school 6 out of 6 years. But long story short, if he goes to the portal and can find a capable quarterback to help steady the ship, then that's all he needs to focus on, at least in year one. I think the portal is going to be his friend. Because at this point, if you do have some issues as far as roster turnover, the only way to alleviate those concerns in the short term is by accessing the portal. Now, will that throw things off down the road as far as roster management? Yes. And that's something he's going to need to be mindful of 3-4 years from now. But let's just focus at least on the immediate. let's try to patch up some of the holes on the roster, and let's try to find capable pieces that do have college experience that can step right in and play early and at least understand what it is we're trying to do as far as building a foundation for the future. So I think that could be potentially mutually beneficial too for maybe a player or two that had kind of an unceremonious send-off at their previous school. So he needs to find a quarterback first and foremost. He needs to hit the portal as hard as humanly possible. And if he can do those two things, then at least they can put together a roster that can be somewhat competitive next year. But being competitive is a relative term. Right now, Tennessee's version of being competitive is getting to the postseason if they're eligible.
Yeah, and you just mentioned it, if they're eligible, we have no earthly idea, but it's hard to be, whether you can be optimistic or not about the future or even the short term, it's hard to be optimistic, Greg, is it not, when it comes to the NCAA situation?
But from what I've heard, that's the biggest thing holding everybody back right now is no one really knows. And there were other people that were contacted that had legitimate interest in the job. As did Josh Heupel. A lot of people wanted this job, shockingly, Paul. And if it were done under normal circumstances, I think it would have been a highly, highly regarded job amongst the coaching circles. However, you have the cloud of uncertainty hanging over the program. And if there's one thing that fans, that players, that more importantly, recruits strongly dislike, is the cloud of uncertainty. Well, the cloud is lifted just ever so slightly because we at least know who the coach is going to be moving forward, but we still don't know exactly what's going to come as far as NCAA sanctions. The thing that I would anticipate, just given normal circumstances, the NCAA is not really in a position at the moment to bring the hammer down on anybody. It's not going to happen. They haven't, and they won't, and I don't recall the last time they did. But there will be more than likely self-imposed sanctions that Tennessee will implement, and they will probably do so with the help of the NCAA. So whether that leads to a postseason ban, a loss of scholarships, some type of effect moving forward, reduction of days on the road for recruiting, they will feel it. It's just a matter of how badly they will feel it and how quickly they will get to the other side. Because if they have a 5 or 6 or 7 year probation, God knows how long, that could be really problematic. But given the fact that it was Jeremy Pruitt's staff that made these transgressions happen, I wouldn't try to bring the hammer down on Josh Heupel. He had nothing to do with it, and I would hope that they can figure something out in the near term where they can penalize themselves and it won't have a long-term impact on what Tennessee might be.
Greg, finally, it seems like Tennessee has ripped off or pilfered UCF for everything but the mascot. Do you think Heupel will go to UCF to bring in his coaching staff, or most of them?
That's a real interesting question. Obviously, Randy Shannon would be probably the number one name that most SEC fans would recognize, who is now the interim coach at UCF and was formerly the defensive coordinator. If I were him, I think it needs to be somewhat of a blend. If you look at what Scott Frost did when he left for Nebraska, he brought almost the entire UCF staff, and that hasn't worked out real well for him. I think it has to be a blend. I don't think you can ever say, hey, we're going to take the whole crew, and we're going to go up north, and we're going to do it all over again. It's not going to happen that way. I think you have to have a lot of people, and Josh Heupel's been in the league before. I think he understands the importance of having people that are familiar with the footprint. And right now, given the recruiting battles that Tennessee is likely to fight, very, very difficult battles here probably in the next couple months, knowing just the great programs that surround them and their geographic footprint. Just to the south, you have Alabama and Auburn. To the east, you have Clemson. To the southeast, an Atlanta area where they've hit so hard over the years, they have Georgia that has put up a fence. You even have Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech, who's done a pretty dang good job there in the Atlanta area as well. Just to the north, Kentucky's rolling a little bit, and Ohio north of that. I think the Tennessee footprint is more challenging than ever to try to recruit again. So he's got to find guys that are tremendous relationship builders, both in the state of Tennessee, but also in the extending areas. And then they need to have someone that can really hit the state of Texas. Now, Josh Heupel has credibility in the Big 12 footprint, given that he was spent so much time at Oklahoma. He was a quarterback that was in the Heisman running a million years ago. But still, he has a lot of credibility in the Dallas-Fort Worth and in the state of Texas. So he's got to have a guy that can hit that area as well, because there's a lot of great players that don't necessarily get found by the Longhorns, by the Aggies, and by the other programs that are in the state. So if Tennessee can find a way to create a pipeline there, that would be really beneficial as well by recruiting someone with ties to the state.
Greg McElroy joining us with his take on the hire today. Greg, thank you. We appreciate it very much. We head to the break, and we have much more to do on this program, including your phone calls in a moment at 855-242-7285. We've already talked about Heupel with Blake and Greg, Booger later, Reese Davis, and of course, we've had Shane Beamer on as well.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And welcome back. Great to have all of you here on a busy Wednesday afternoon. And Ben is up next in Jacksonville. Hey, Ben.
How's it going, Paul?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the Josh Heupel hire. I think it's a good hire. I hope, you know, he starts winning in Tennessee. And I hear everybody always talking about, oh, well, he just inherited a team from Scott Frost, and that was Scott Frost's team. I'm really hoping that we didn't Muschamp ourselves. Like Will Muschamp, they always say, he picked up Urban Meyer's team, he picked up Steve Spurrier's team. Obviously, he's not inheriting a whole lot, but what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's – he didn't wreck the program, so you have to give Heupel credit. The program slipped a little bit, but it was at a extremely high level under Scott Frost. I mean, they did some good things his first year, then the program trailed off a little bit the second year, and then this year they had a pretty uneven year, but some of that could be COVID-related. It really I don't have any doubt that he's capable of coaching. I think the real issue is just what type of culture can he build there? Can he recruit quality players? And as McElroy was talking about, what's the final disposition of the NCAA sanctions going to be? Let's check in next with Fred, who is up next. Hey, Fred.
Hey, Paul.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, Fred, go right ahead.
Yes, after most of this coaching carousel is over, I was just thinking about the defensive coordinators that were mentioned. And can you name anybody else other than Kirby Smart who has won a conference championship that was the defensive coordinator in the last 20 years?
It's a good question. Off the top, I mean, first of all, in the last 20 years, we're talking about primarily Alabama, Auburn, Florida, and Georgia. So right off the top of my head.
Any conference championship.
Oh, any conference. Well.
Any.
Given some time, I'm sure I could. Off the top of my head, I'm not coming up with much.
Okay. Well, I just noticed a lot of defensive people were mentioned, and I'm just trying to think. I mean, Barry Odom was there, but he didn't win the conference championship. He won the division. And so I did.
Let me correct myself. I can think of one that won a national championship. Bob Stoops was a defensive coordinator at Florida. He went to Oklahoma and about 3 years later won the national championship.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Enjoy talking to you.
Yeah, you bet. I wish I could have come up with that sooner. Pat is up next in Tennessee. Hey, Pat.
Hello.
Hi there.
I'm fine. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you.
Good. All I want to do is just reiterate what John from Kentucky said, that we've got to do our job at Tennessee as these supporters and support our team in the way we have in the past. No matter what bad decisions have been made or the results of those decisions, they are trying to put together a very good team, I feel, to go forward with what Tennessee has done.
Pat, allow me to ask you, how can you do your part?
I can go to the games. I can support what we have, no matter what that is, and not just keep talking about the past and what happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that does make a lot of sense. The issue there becomes how many people won't do it. It's really not about what people say on social media. That's ridiculous. That's not going to determine the outcome of how a program does. It's really about support, and support is people that give money to the school, that support it in other ways, and ultimately show up at the games. Thank you for the call. How about Steve, who is up next? Hey, Steve, you're in Alabama, and you are on the air.
Thank you, Paul. I live in Alabama, but right on the edge of the Tennessee line. I grew up a Tennessee fan, still a Tennessee fan.
Sure.
I agree with what the lady before said, previous caller. I agree with what Greg McElroy said. We've got to support our team, but we've got to be patient. It's not going to come overnight. It's something that we've got to be patient and support and build. It's not there now.
Well, Steve, the most difficult and frustrating part of this is this conversation about supporting Tennessee has been going on now, has been going on for about 13 years. And every time the fan base seems to say, you're right, we need to give this coach a chance, something explodes. And I was hearing that not that long ago about Jeremy. And I think Tennessee fans were going to bite their lip and give him another season, and then all of this happened. But ultimately, this is big entertainment. This is big business. It's not about whether the two of us talk about it positively or negatively. It's about what this program can do on the field and off the field. Off the field is White's responsibility. On the field is up to Josh Heupel. Thank you very much for the call. And Cameron is up next in Virginia. Cameron, go right ahead. You are next up.
Yes, sir. First-time caller here. I was calling to see what your thoughts are on the remaining coaching staff at Tennessee. In all honesty, I'm not entirely sure who is even left, but of the ones that are left, who do you think will be retained? Who do you think will be let go?
Cameron, I don't know. I thought Heupel was very coy today when asked specifically about Kevin Steele. He didn't say Kevin Steele has a great reputation, I've always admired him, but I'd like to sit down and talk to him. He just simply blew it off and said, I'll sit down and talk to everyone. So I have no idea what he's thinking. I'm guessing he's going to bring some people with him. Randy Shanahan's a really interesting name that Greg mentioned. He's a very prominent coach. He's been at Florida. He was head coach in Miami. Has deep recruiting ties to Florida. So if he does not get the UCF job, and I really don't know what the disposition of that is right now, then that would be an interesting name to watch. I happen to think he's a good coach. Now, does Kevin Steele have a two-week stay in Knoxville? He may. But I doubt seriously Josh Heupel cares one way or the other. He's going to hire the people that he feels comfortable with, and that's exactly what he should do. Corey is up next. Hey, Corey, you are on the air.
Hey, Paul, first-time caller here from Georgia, you know, Tennessee fan. My question is, I know Josh has a good or decent resume as a head coach. What do you think we're going to be getting as a recruiter from him? I mean, as far as his track record, what do you think, you know, the people he'll bring in, do you think he'll recruit okay in the SEC?
Well, he needs, first of all, somebody who is a dynamite recruiter on his staff because, yeah, I mean, he has familiarity, but, you know, he spent the majority of his career at Oklahoma. And, you know, those 2 years at Missouri are not necessarily going to prepare him to recruit for Tennessee. It's a completely different type of athlete, for the most part, that you're recruiting. To recruit the elite athletes, he's going to have to go to places he's been before, which is Texas, primarily the Dallas Metroplex. But he's also got to figure out a way to navigate North Carolina against Clemson and Frank Beamer. He has to figure out how to deal with Georgia against Kirby Smart. He's got to figure out a way to deal for the top players in his own state against all of the above and Nick Saban. So I think ultimately that's the big challenge.
Well, thank you, Paul. I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you. Nice of you to be with us. And Mac is up next in Baltimore. Hey, Mac. No Mac. How about Florida? Let's go to Tim, who is up next. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Paul. With Jason Witten's retirement 15 minutes ago.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Him as the first unofficial hire at the University of Tennessee under the Heupel regime.
It's possible. I mean, Jason Witten is as big a name outside of Peyton Manning as you can get. So I didn't realize Jason had retired, but
I just saw it 15 minutes.
Yeah, no, I would say Jason Witten would be a fantastic recruiter.
I agree.
Yeah, no, I mean,
I think it's pretty ironic. He retired 15 minutes ago, and Heupel's there, and here we go, Tennessee.
Jason knows the way. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. John Talty, who covers the inside moves of all coaching searches, will join us in a minute. We look forward to talking to John, who works for AL.com. He'll be with us right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we welcome you back. It's great to be here on a busy day. I want to go back to a caller a few minutes ago. He asked me about defensive coordinators doing well, and I don't know how I overlooked my friend Gene Shizik, who was a defensive coordinator, and then he became a head coach and then won the national championship 11 years ago. Let's get to the subject du jour, and that is the hiring of Josh Heupel. John Talty joining us. Nobody better to dig deep into how this came about. And John, as we say hello to you, I want to start with Danny White. Accolades across the board the other day. He didn't promise a big-time hire. We just expected a big-time hire. Very few of us expected him to go back to where he had already been and take another person away from UCF. So as we welcome you here, how would you grade Danny White on his first big decision, his most important decision as Tennessee's athletic director?
Hey, good to talk to you, Paul. I would say, you know, we talked about Danny White as someone who had kind of built his reputation as an AD, as someone who, you know, made great hires. And we rattled off, you know, Nate Oates and Scott Frost and Lance Leopold. You know, I thought before this most recent hire that his, you know, you could make a good argument that his weakest hire that he had made as an AD was Josh Heupel at UCF. Especially given the trajectory that I think we've seen in the last year or two of Josh maybe not necessarily being able to elevate the program beyond what Scott Frost had left. So the fact that he then hired him again here at Tennessee, I think there's reasons why people have questioned this hire and why I think it's gotten, you know, at best a mixed reaction from the fan base. You know, I think certainly there are positives to take away from his hire, you know, someone who does have a pretty good reputation as an offensive mind. And I think one of the key things that, you know, you have to remember as to maybe why Danny didn't get a huge name is what we talked about the last time I was on your show, Paul, and that's just the fact that Tennessee very loudly announced to the world that they were going to have some serious NCAA issues in the future. And, of course, that's going to give potential coaching candidates pause about joining a program that could be facing bowl bans and scholarship reductions and other potential issues in the very near future.
John, nobody's got better sources than you in terms of how these things come about. And I realize this is a new story. You put a masterpiece together over a couple of days on the hiring of Brian Harsin. So maybe I'm getting you early in the process, and this is not a beat that you cover full time. But what's your best guess on how Danny White ended up with Josh Heupel?
Yeah, I think that in some ways you can look back to, you know, the moves that Florida AD Scott Strickland made when he went from Mississippi State to Florida, and that, you know, that one was a more publicized story, more well-known, some of the people they went after. But essentially, Scott, you know, made runs at Chip Kelly and Scott Frost, ended up not working out with either one, and then hired Dan Mullen away from Mississippi State, a guy that I think he knew he could go to if he didn't get maybe his top candidate or two. I think there's a lot of similarities with this search in that certainly Danny White did his due diligence, talked to some different people. Tony Elliott's a name that got a lot of, I think, attention publicly. But, you know, I think knew that if he had to, he kind of had Josh Heupel in his back pocket. And after gauging the market, you know, could go back to Josh and knew that he would take the job. And so I think that's in part what you've seen happen here. Like you said, Paul, you know, I think we'll know more in the next 48 hours or so as people like myself, you know, talk to people, and maybe people are more willing to talk about exactly what happened. But that's kind of the best read that I get on it, is that they gauged the market. I know there was conversations with James Franklin too. And then from there, I think he saw, all right, Josh is a guy that I know and someone that I can bring over here to Tennessee.
John, I know you've heard this story, but there is one that James Franklin considered it seriously, but threw an unbelievably high number on the board, and Tennessee simply wasn't willing to pay him. I realize that that's making the round, but that's coming from reasonably good sources. Assuming that that is exactly what happened, what would you make out of that story?
Well, Paul, I think, you know, James Franklin was already making $6+ million at Penn State. And so for him to leave, you would think would require a bump up from that. You know, Tennessee has already kind of publicly postured that they're not going to pay Jeremy Pruitt's $12 million buyout. But, you know, we already know there's going to be a legal battle there. And so that there's, you know, there's at least a possibility, you know, maybe they settle for a few million dollars or something like that. But I don't think there's, you know, there's at least a possibility they're going to have to spend some money on Pruitt, even though they're saying now that they're not going to pay him because of firing him with cause. So there's some different things that add up after a while. And so, you know, here you're getting Josh Heupel, who I believe is making about $4 million based on his contract terms that were released. That's a bit more palatable than paying someone $7 million plus, especially given some of the challenges that, you know, every, I think, athletic department is dealing with right now related to the pandemic. And I also think that it ties into, I think, in some ways, a bigger trend we've seen. You know, I think South Carolina is another example in which, you know, they talked to some big names that wanted big money and then ultimately hired Shane Beamer at a much more palatable $3 million figure. So you're seeing, you know, I think in some ways people have been surprised by the fact that schools have been willing to pay big buyouts for these coaches like Will Muschamp and Gus Malzahn. But I think one area that we have seen some impact of the past year is that we're not seeing the big exorbitant salaries, starting salaries, that maybe we have in the past when schools have tried to poach coaches from other schools.
Talking to John Talty about where Tennessee is. John, Yeah, sometimes you can be a little too close to the sun. But you know, if you had asked me a couple of years ago how good of a job I think or thought Tennessee was, I mean, I would have gone pretty high. But after seeing this university hire Derek Dooley, Butch Jones, Jeremy Pruitt, and now Josh Heupel, I throw the question back to you. How does this job rank?
Well, Paul, at some point, if you're never able to really hire a high-level person, then maybe it's time to reevaluate how we perceive the job. You know, I think like you, people talk about Tennessee as, you know, potentially a top-five job in the SEC, but we haven't seen that level of success, and we certainly haven't seen it attract that level of candidates. You know, I think in the last couple coaching searches, people have loved to use Tennessee as a way to get more money, way to, you know, leverage them. I think Mike Gundy has probably been the master of that. I think he's used them in at least a couple coaching searches now to get more money from his school. And that's what I think Tennessee's become. It's become known as a place that's been a mess, that organizationally is not kind of performing at peak efficiency. And it's just not, you know, that high level of a job the way it was. You know, I think we can all, you know, remember back to that time, you know, when they won a national championship. But for kids that are coming up as recruits now, they either weren't born when that happened or they were a baby. It didn't care. And so it doesn't quite have that level of kind of sway the way it did in the past. And so I think at this point, it's a middle of the pack SEC job. You know, I think just off the top of my head, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, LSU, Auburn are all certainly better jobs than Tennessee at this point. I think you can make arguments for, you know, other programs, whether that's, you know, even an Ole Miss or something like that. But it's just not the level that I think we used to think of it in kind of the late 90s, early 2000s when Phil Fulmer had that thing rolling.
Yeah, I mean, John, there's only so many times you can the new coach can say he just texted Peyton Manning. I mean, that only has so much resonance, doesn't it?
Well, and I'll tell you this, as someone who, you know, grew up in the Northeast and is a fan of the New York Jets, you know, Peyton Manning recommended Adam Gase to the Jets. Of course, very hard for Adam Gase to get the Jets job, and it didn't work out. So, you know, that's no disrespect to Peyton Manning, but just because Peyton Manning likes somebody or endorses somebody doesn't mean that they're going to be successful. And, you know, Peyton Manning soon is going to probably be known more for his commercials with some of these younger recruits than what he did actually on the field. And, you know, I think that it's great to have Peyton Manning. He's a big name. He's part of, you know, he's got the whole famous Manning family, but I don't think that that necessarily is going to sway a coach to come to Tennessee or even at this point top recruit to come to Tennessee.
Josh Chalty, before you go, you know what the past is, you know where we are presently. It's always difficult to look ahead, but knowing the wins of the NCAA are out there, knowing who now is the Tennessee football coach, but 3 years from now, where do you think this program will be?
I don't want to be too harsh, Paul. I feel like I'm in a good mood. Don't want to be too mean and rain on the parade of Tennessee fans. But if we just play the odds and we play, you know, the past history, in 3 years, we're probably talking about Josh Heupel being on the hot seat and thinking about who his next, you know, replacement is going to be. I mean, that's just been the trend, I feel like, for the last few coaching hires. And so more likely than not, you know, in 3 years, if Heupel hasn't delivered any sort of discernible results, Tennessee fans will probably be ready to move on from him, and they'll probably be pressuring Danny White to bring in somebody new.
Hmm. John Talty, the senior sports editor at AL.com. John, you never disappoint. Thank you so much. We will talk very soon.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate you.
Wow. We'll take a break. More to come, including a conversation with Reese Davis, Booger McFarlane. We've had quite a program already, and we will get to your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of
ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we welcome you back. And Joe is calling next as we continue with your phone calls. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Paul.
Hey there.
Hello.
Yeah, you're on the air, Joe.
I have a question. How bad a shape was Kentucky in before it was taken over by Stoops versus Tennessee now?
Pretty bad. I don't know until we get the probation down, but it was a broken down program, and Stoops needed a considerably long period of time to rebuild it, and he almost didn't get it, but fortunately Mitch Barnhart and President Capiluto stuck with him, and he was able to finally get the recruits he needed in there and the infrastructure, which was critical. Tennessee already has that.
Well, I'm just trying to compare that to Tennessee shape right now. It's, you know, even if Nick Saban was in there, I don't know if he could turn it around in 3 years.
That would be very difficult. I mean, it is that type of a program. You're right. Harold is up next in Kentucky. Hey, Harold, good afternoon. Harold, you there?
Yes.
Well, go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Harold, I am doing great.
Paul, I've got two things today. I'll be real quick. Number one is Nick Saban is the greatest coach, bar none, since Bear Bryant.
Okay, I agree.
Thank you for that, because I'm an old man. I haven't done any coaching, but I'm an old man. I've seen a lot of basketball, football. Now, the other thing, my good friend and coach, Calipari, we're in the dumps. We got no business being there. He's got a lifetime contract. It's all about himself. He wants to yell and cuss those boys up and down the floor and embarrass them. That's for practice, Paul. That's what you do for practice. You're supposed to get all of them ready to play golf. Last night against Alabama, he opens up with a play for Sarr. Sarr couldn't hit he's lucky to get inside the building. but he is the coach, I understand that. But I don't agree with it at all. We got a lifetime.
Harold, let me make sure you understand this. I mean, John Calipari is a great coach. He's having a terrible year, and things do get blown a little bit out of proportion. Mike is up next in Tennessee. Mike, thank you. Good afternoon.
Yes, sir, Paul. I was talking to you a while ago and got cut off. So I heard your comment about the social media and Kenny White. I just wanted to tell you I agree with you on that. People are told their opinions. But I can tell you this also. The opinion in Upper East Tennessee right now is not good.
No, you're right, Mike. Hey, thank you. I appreciate you checking back in with us. Ed is in Georgia. Hey, Ed, you're on the air. Go right ahead, Ed.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
We are doing well. Thank you.
I got a few questions about Tennessee and with the hiring. Do you think that he's going to have to not only recruit the players that are leaving out, but possibly the coaches as well? You know, say Jay Graham or T. Martin, you know, coaches.
Yeah, I think T. Martin is probably the most interesting one to keep your eye on. And, you know, there was a story out today that he talked to one of his teammates. I believe it was Peerless Price. And naturally, there may have been some uneasiness. But, You know, T. Martin is a legendary figure in that program. So I never like coaches to be told what they should or shouldn't do. You have to draw your own conclusions, but it's always smart to retain or ascertain someone with strong connections to the program.
And another question is, do you think, you know, what do you think Coach is going to have to do within this first week, you know, these first few days of where he just got hired? You know, the main things that he needs to be.
Well, I think what he has to do is his big tasks are trying to make sure you contain the damage that's already occurred. And what I mean by that is players who have bailed out and gone into the portal. I don't know. I'm sure he'll meet with as many players as he can and talk to as many. He's also in the middle of recruiting, which is critical. And on top of all that, he has to pretty quickly put a staff together. And he's done it before. This is not his first head coaching responsibility. Central Florida may not mean a lot to some people, but it plays on a big stage. So he has that in his back pocket. So he'll need a lot of help. There won't be a spare second. We talked to Beamer earlier, and he's been there for 2.5, almost 2 months, and you know, he doesn't have a spare minute. Coaches are very busy this time of the year. There's a lot going on. We'll take a break. More to come. Reese Davis and Booger McFarland coming up in the next 2 hours. We appreciate you being a part of the show.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.